This is PCJ Radio International.
Media Network Plus.
Hello and welcome to the program. On May 1st, the president of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, Hubert Lacroix, and the director of Radio Canada International, Michel Perron, were asked to appear at the Senate Transport and Communications Committee to answer questions why the CBC cut RCI's budget by 80%. Many involved in international broadcasting are questioning the draconian cuts. This is Media Network Plus, climbing the wall so you don't have to. First, here's Keith with a look at some of the headlines from the world of media.
The BBC has warned to brace itself for a summer of strikes after its annual pay offer for staff was dismissed as absolutely unacceptable by broadcasting unions. BBC employees earning less than £60,000 will receive a flat rate increase of £600 under the proposed outlines Tuesday, meaning more than a third of its staff will get a below inflation rise of 2%. The offer would see all BBC staff receive a minimum pay increase of 1% in the year from August 1st, including its best-paid employees earning more than £60,000. But the proposal was rejected by the BBC's biggest union, BECTU, which complained that the offer was made just weeks after the corporation hired three senior executives, earning a combined total of more than £1 million. The earliest date for the strike is mid-July, but any walkout is likely to come after that date, as unions negotiate with the BBC management. In the UK, the radio regulatory Ofcom has confirmed that a special round of community radio licensing will take place later this year, bringing community broadcasting to the islands of Guernsey, Adderley, and Sark for the first time. The move follows legislation passed by the Balwick allowing community radio to license there. Guernsey is not part of the UK and has separate legislative powers. However, Ofcom still regulates radio in the islands, which are currently exclusively covered by BBC Radio and a commercial station on the island, Island FM. The Justice Department in the United States top antitrust informer said on Tuesday that he supports limits on how much of the nation's airwaves a single wireless company could hold, a condition that could keep AT&T and Verizon from bidding on certain blocks of airwaves during auctions. William J. Baer, the Assistant Attorney General who oversees the antitrust division, told the Senate committee that limits were needed to promote competition in the market for wireless broadband service. The remarks echoed complaints filed by the Justice Department last week in response to a Federal Communications Commission request for recommendations on how public airwaves or spectrum should be allocated. The FCC sought the comments in preparation for the auction in 2014 of spectrum that is hoping to reclaim from television broadcasters. AT&T is launching a prepaid cell phone service, AIL Wireless. The new subsidiary will offer nationwide wireless access to value-conscious customers interested in unlimited talk, text, and data plans without an annual contract. AIL launched recently in stores including in Houston, Orlando, and Tampa. AT&T plans to roll out the service in multiple markets across the United States over the next year. The company will offer three rate plans from $35 to $70 a month. Dallas-based AT&T already offers some special prepaid wireless services, but this would significantly increase its presence. Prepaid plans tend to be less profitable for companies, but they appeal to some customers that have lower monthly fees. Often, they don't require a credit check or a service contract. However, the buyer usually has to pay full or nearly full prices for phones. AIL's debut phone, T-Mobile's decision in March to move away from contract-based plans was to appeal to have more customers. And finally, the ABC, that's the Australian Broadcasting Company, could soon abandon international shortwave radio broadcasts to China and Indonesia, ending more than 70 years of beaming news and current affairs programs on high frequencies into those areas. But the public broadcaster's management insists it will not flick the switch on shortwave services of Radio Australia to Papua New Guinea and tiny Pacific nations for now. ABC International Chief Lindsay Marshall said that the older shortwave technology was still relevant in the Pacific, despite a drive to make mobile and internet services the primary way of delivering news. Staff had grown increasingly alarmed in recent months that the shortwave services to the Pacific would be canned, including the popular TalkPixin service to PNG, raising fears expats and locals would be vulnerable to dangerous news blackouts during national disasters and regional strife. A decision will be made later on. And that was a look at some of the headlines happening in the world of media this week. I'm Keith Parent.
Call the PCJ answer line at country code 44-20-3286-1399. That's country code 44-20-3286-1399 and leave your comments and questions. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is PCJ Radio.
This is Media Network Plus coming to you from PCJ Radio International. A few months ago, we had Canadian Senator Hugh Segal on the program. He joined us to talk about a motion he put forward to call CBC management in front of the Senate Committee on Transport and Communications to explain why they arbitrarily cut Radio Canada International's budget by 80%. Even the Canadian Ministry of Foreign Affairs was in the dark about it. The department found out about the cuts the same time as the general public did. It's no secret that since the early 1990s, the CBC has wanted to do away with RCI. CBC management have been trying every trick in the book to bring about RCI's ultimate demise. The Senate hearing Senator Segal called for took place last week. Keith watched the broadcast online and found the proceedings a little fishy on a few counts. He joins us now for more.
Well, a few months ago, Paulette, as you may remember, we had Senator Hugh Segal on the program.
Right.
And he was raising questions about why a 20% cut to the CBC's budget would translate to an 80% cut of Radio Canada International's budget.
Mm-hmm.
So he called for this Senate hearing, which happened on May 1st in Ottawa. So the president of the CBC and the director of Radio Canada International had to appear in front of the Senate to answer questions.
So was this the first time? Like, how did it get to his attention? And you know, has it appeared or has this issue come forth before the Senate before? Or is this the first time?
This is not the first time. Certainly not the first time, but it's the first time that, well, let me put it diplomatically, it's the first time that it was handled with a little bit of suspicion on the part of the CBC. Now, previous Senate hearings into budget cuts to Radio Canada International always had the director of the CBC, and also, of course, the director of Radio Canada International. They also had, of course, testimonies from others in the international broadcast business, you can say, to put their thoughts forward to give the senators asking the questions a better idea of what international broadcasting does. Now, you know, you're talking about senators here, Paulette. You know, they're going to so many different hearings, they can't be an expert and know exactly what's happening on every single one.
Right, so it's, you're saying in the past then they really didn't know too much about it, so they kind of would go along, they would take whatever was presented to them as okay and not look into it very deeply because of their lack of expertise and knowledge of international broadcasting?
Well, that's what they did this time. Now, previous at hearings, like I said, they would always have, say, witness testimony. Sort of like, you know, when the CRTC is granting a license to a radio station, mm-hmm. they have people that come forward with their thoughts, right?
Right.
But
right.
this time, that was not done. That was not done. The CBC, from my sources, tell me that their lawyers had been negotiating to not allow any witness testimony to come forward. So it was only, in fact, the CBC and Radio Canada International. I had put a letter of testimony forward. I know a number of other people that had, and it was all pushed aside. So it was the CBC, in fact, controlling the Senate hearing, because the senators were only getting what the CBC felt that they should be told.
Oh, that's interesting. So who then was representing the CBC, and what did they say? What did they have to say for themselves?
Well, the CBC was represented by Hubert Lacroix, who's the president of the CBC. Mm-hmm. And this is what he had to say in his opening statement.
Our decision to end shortwave broadcasts of RCI and move the service to the internet was not an easy one, nor was it taken lightly. Like all of our budget decisions, we looked carefully at the service, its cost, and how we could best protect the value it provides to Canadians. The reality is that the use of shortwave around the world has been declining since the end of the Cold War. That combined with the growth of cellular phones, internet, traditional radio, and television, this has led broadcasters around the world to cut back on their shortwave services if they do maintain them at all. For example, BBC World closed 5 languages services and has eliminated shortwave broadcasts to Canada, Australia, and the United States. Voice of America has curtailed its short and medium wave broadcasts to Albania, Georgia, Iran, and Latin America, along with English language broadcasts to the Middle East and Afghanistan. In Switzerland, Swiss Info shut down its shortwave in 2004 and now only broadcasts on the web. And 5 days after RCI ended its shortwave-based broadcasts, Radio Netherlands did the same.
That was the president of the CBC, Hubert Lacroix, making his opening statement. And I want to correct a few things that he said there.
Okay.
He said, and he said it clearly, that the BBC World Service, for example, stopped shortwave broadcasts to North America. Now, what he didn't mention is that this was more than 10 years ago. The impression that this leaves is, and I know from speaking to a few other people that heard it as well, it gives the impression that the BBC World Service just stopped doing this.
So why would they want to create that impression?
Well, the CBC and RCI has had a bit of a turbulent relationship going back a number of years. And this is no... within even the world of international broadcasting, broadcasters from overseas already knew this. For a long time, the budget of RCI was handed from the CBC to Foreign Affairs to Heritage Canada, back to Foreign Affairs to the CBC. It's like a whole drama. Back in 1990, in the early 1990s, when I was still doing, just after I stopped doing stuff at RCI, and speaking to people who had worked at RCI for many years, you know, kept saying, and even people on the outside, you know, the CBC wants to get rid of RCI. They don't want to pay for it. They don't want to pay for it. And people have been saying this going back to the early 1990s. And the CBC, of course, was always denying that. But everybody knew, because every time the budget was handed over back to the CBC always did, how would I put it, sort of funny things. Like, for example, RCI's mandate was to provide a shortwave services in areas that they could not reach by satellite or the internet.
Okay. That's pretty clear.
The CBC, yeah, the CBC had this mandate changed secretly. So that meant the CBC was not required for RCI to continue a shortwave service. People only found out about it about 4 months after it happened.
Now, was this when Senator Hugh Segal came on the scene?
This was just before he came on the scene. I think it's because of this, it alerted him, you know, something strange is going on here.
So I recall we interviewed him last fall, and he mentioned this hearing, and I think one previous as well. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious, because I was the one who spoke to him as to what the follow-up was. He was looking forward to really asking some tough questions. So were there any tough questions, anybody else besides Senator Segal who was asking them?
Well, tough questions. I think we could write a comedy program about this. And again, you know, you have to understand, and of course, I'm not blasting Canadian senators or anybody who is in that kind of position because, you know, throughout the week, sometimes they're hearing three, four different things.
Mm-hmm.
So any information that's given to them is given to them by their civil servants and whoever it is they're going to be asking questions to. So, of course, if information is left out, they're going to go in there and just ask some basic general questions. Now, this whole Senate hearing into the cuts to the CBC and RCI was a bit farcical because you could sense that maybe the senators wanted to ask more questions. But because they didn't have enough information to ask more questions, it was basically the CBC for over an hour patting themselves on the back, saying, you see, look, we reduced our budget by 20%, but we can actually move forward now.
Say again? What?
Exactly. The senators didn't have enough information. Now, there was one senator that did ask a question about RCI dropping shortwave, saying, how do you plan to penetrate certain markets where, let's say, there's internet censorship or the internet can be turned off in a flash, right?
Yes. So what did they, how did they respond?
Well, this was rather funny because Hélène Perron, who's the director of RCI, she and also Hubert Lacroix said, oh, you know what? Okay, we dropped shortwave, but there's markets now that can download our programming and incorporate it into their own local programming. Now, this is where bells went off in my head. Now, while that is true in some cases, right, for years, for more than 10 years, Radio Canada International's website has been blocked in China.
Exactly.
Now, if they're claiming that their programs in Chinese are running on Chinese radio stations, they are, I don't know what it is they're smoking. Because there is a law in China from the State Administration of Film, Radio, and Television that forbids content from foreign broadcasters to be used on domestic radio stations.
Now, does Senator Siegel and other senators know this?
I don't think they do because, unfortunately, the information that was given to them came from the CBC. And because, okay. And you see, because other witnesses were not allowed to come forward, so even let's say somebody wanted to appear, they had to write a testimony before. The normal procedure is that testimony would have been handed to the senators. They would have had more information about who they're going to be speaking to, but that wasn't done.
So this hearing is much different from previous hearings in the past.
Oh, totally. Because in the past, when experts came forward, or for example, people like Victor, for example, if he sent a testimony in from Sri Lanka to talk about the importance of shortwave, let's say, to Southeast Asia, the senators would say to the CBC, well, you have to restore their funding.
So things were cooked and orchestrated so that these senators would not understand the situation and be able to put the proper pressure on them?
Right. And, you know, the thing is, I'm not blaming the senators here. I'm really not blaming the senators.
Well, because, I understand,
You know, they're in the position. I mean, like I said, they're doing so many hearings. If they don't have information that's in front of them, they can only go so far. But this was everybody who paid attention to it and listened to the hearing on May 1st saying this was orchestrated by the CBC to do exactly this. And this, people have been saying that for years the CBC has wanted to do this.
Well, I recall that. Yes, for decades, mm-hmm. actually. And the CBC, and it's just, is it simply a matter of economics, Keith? Is it just that they don't want to pay for it? They have other things that they would rather put the money towards?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with when you have situations where, say, national public broadcasters are in charge of their external services, the problem is, you need people in the external services that know about international broadcasting. At the CBC, there is nobody who knows about international broadcasting. So when the CBC appoints somebody to RCI as a director or manager, they're just sort of dumping them over there. I mean, the joke within the CBC is that, oh, we send managers who are on their last legs to RCI.
Oh, what a shame. How is this happening?
Well, it's because since the early 1990s, there's been, you know, RCI has been passed around from one place to the other, that it's gotten a little bit out of control. Now, in countries, for example, like the United States, international broadcasting is not handled by broadcasters. It's handled by the Broadcasting Board of Governors. Now, with what's happened with RCI, it's having a bit of a rippling effect, because next year the BBC World Service is having their budget transferred to the domestic service of the BBC, which is paid for by the TV license.
Oh, deja vu all over
again?
It's
deja vu, and everybody's saying this is exactly what's going to happen, and we've seen similar things in other countries before. If we take New Zealand, for example, Radio New Zealand International belongs to Radio New Zealand, the domestic service. And for a short time, the budget was handed over to the domestic service, but the domestic service wanted to cut their budget. So the government stepped in and said, okay, you know what, we'll put it under you, but we're still going to take care of the budget. Because domestic services don't have the know-how, they don't have the background for international broadcasting. And it's the same story that repeats itself over and over and over. And I predicted earlier this year that the BBC World Service by the year 2018 will be tiny. I predicted it, and I will even put money on it. That's how sure I am.
What a shame. What a shame.
You know, I mean, RCI, yeah. RCI's, okay, despite the fact there are problems with RCI, and like every organization, you know, but RCI's budget and mandate should, because it's part of public diplomacy.
Of course.
It should be handled by Foreign Affairs.
Yes.
It should be handled by Foreign Affairs and not the CBC, because, you know, the CBC has made a mess of it. But it's become, you know, it's sort of like nobody wants to take responsibility. You know, one government in Ottawa wants to do this. Another one wants to do this. So they're just sort of they're like a ping pong ball that's going around. Now, when you think about it in the grand scheme of things, RCI's budget now is $2.3 million. Before the budget cut, it was 12.3 million.
Wow.
And it was one of the least expensive international services in the world. When you calculate how much money from Canadians actually went into the service, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you and I have more change in our pocket. You know,
but you know, it's very to me. It's very strange that this is a treasure that nobody can seem to recognize. You know, in the power circles.
Well, you know, I think a lot of it, Paulette, also has to do. Okay, if we talk, let's say, about Canada's position in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Canada's position in the world was a lot stronger 20 years ago than it is now. If I take, say, here in the Asia Pacific, right, Canada's diplomatic missions have shrunk.
And do you think that RCI had anything to do with Canada's public foreign image?
Oh, in many parts of the world, I mean, it was. If you talk to people that learned about Canada, they learned about it through RCI, because it was the RCI. And at one time, the CBC International Service, they were the only window into Canada. Now, what they do well, and some people will say, yeah, but they have the internet now. People can go on the internet. And that's true. But the thing is, you know, news websites in Canada or the domestic service of the CBC are not written for an international audience.
Good point.
You know, RCI would write about Canada for an international audience. So, for example, on CBC Radio, they can just say, oh, I'll give you a small example. They can say, oh, today in Newfoundland, this happened in St. John's. Now, this RCI would say, in Newfoundland, on the east coast of Canada, in the provincial capital of St. John's, they would give more detail so people have a better idea where it is.
Right, right.
This is what RCI has done extremely well. So it gave a lot of information to people about Canada,
mm-hmm.
The same way that, say, the Voice of America does,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
or the BBC World Service. But unfortunately, in Canada, they never, especially over in the last 20 years,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's sort of like they've forgotten all that. I mean, during the Cold War, right, Radio Canada International, or as it was called a long time ago, the CBC International Service, was one of the first stations to target communist countries in Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union. One of the first.
On May 19th, May 26th, June 2nd, and June 9th, PCJ will conduct 4 tests from Trincomalee, Sri Lanka, for listeners in East and Southeast Asia. The time will be from 13 to 1400 UTC. The frequency will be 11750 kHz. For more information, please check out the news section on the PCJ website, www.pcjmedia.com. Now, time for propagation. Here's Dan Hensley.
The 10.7-centimeter flux on May 11th is 125, down to 120 on May 12th and 13th, up 5 points to 125 on May 14th and 15th, down to 120 one more time on May 16th and 17th. The A index is 5 all week long from May 11th to May 17th. The KP index is stable at 2 from May 11th to May 17th. We're seeing the return of sunspots en masse this week. 3 of those sunspots will be passing out of view to the other side of the sun. Those sunspots are 1731, 32, 34, and 36. Sunspots 1738, 39, 40, and 41 are in view. Sunspot AR 1739 poses a threat for Earth-directed M-class solar flares. 1734 is more developed and larger. The pattern we've seen so far is that it is these larger, more developed sunspots that tend to sizzle, boil, and even flare. 1739 is a smaller sunspot, so this is a change from the pattern we've seen over recent weeks. A coronal hole on the east side of the sun that stretches from north to far southeast is sending a solar wind stream earthbound, but it isn't severe enough to create any geomagnetic storms. On May 9th to May 10th, the South Pacific region of the Earth may have experienced a short-lived radio blackout. This would have been the result of a full solar eclipse that day.
Thanks, Dan. And with that, we've come to the end of our program. Thanks so much for joining us. If you'd like to listen to this show again or to past editions of Media Network Plus, you can find the podcasts on our website, which is www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus. If you'd like to drop us a line, please do. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. Once more, that is MNP, which stands for Media Network Plus, at pcjmedia.com. So on behalf of Keith Perron and Dan Hensley, this is Paulette McQuarrie saying so long and see you soon.